Welcome to the Centurion Running Podcast with your co-hosts. Let's get this right this time.
Go on.
James Ali Elson. Bailey.
Yeah, there we go. We said each other's names. James Elson and Ali Bailey.
Excellent. I think I'll just leave that intro to you in future. It seems like you know what you're doing far more than I do.
I do. And everything, actually, including running.
I don't dispute that. How are you?
Really tired. I had a big day out on Monday, big adventurous day out.
Tell us more. Where did you go?
I went to Wales, to North Wales, to the spiky kingdom of Snowdonia to attempt the Welsh 3000s.
Oh, good route.
A good route. Not so good when it's 40, 50 mile an hour wind and raining for 14 hours. That was interesting.
Why did you decide to press on in those conditions? Why did you not? Was it just a one-day window or something?
Because I'm not a weekend warrior like you, James. and I had a group with me of ultra-awesome people, and we booked it ages ago, and I was like, look, we're doing it. But the thing is, you can't ever say you're doing it because of the weather, obviously. So if the mountain leader's telling me not to go on Crib Goc, I'm not going on Crib Goc. And at 4 a.m. in that rain and wind, it was a no-go zone, absolute no-go. Mm. So we were basically a bit fucked before we'd even started. But we missed Crib Goc, we missed Triven because those boulders are so greasy and it was just hammering and so windy.
I know full well how greasy they can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like I was with a group of people, and including myself, that I have a little bit of mountain running experience, but not enough for me to put my life in danger on those ridges. So those were the two we missed. So we did most of it, I'd say 90% of it. We got to the end, it took a long time, and it was very, very, very hard in those conditions. But I said to them all, look, you're never going to be able to pay for that experience of being put into those conditions in an environment where you can test kit and test how your mental fortitude is. And so actually it was a massive win because we all got through it. And it's an incredible route, and I'm going again in August. So I'm hoping that I can complete it then. But it was just a big day out for a bank holiday Monday. We had to get up at 2:30 in the morning to start it. Unbelievable. Yeah.
So 30 miles-ish.
31 miles-ish.
15,000 feet, something like that.
Yeah, lovely job. All of the awful weather. But what I couldn't get my head around was the record on it. Because I looked at the record on it the day before, the fastest known time. And he Finley did a shorter route, but 4 hours and 10 minutes. Are you joking? It took me 18 hours.
He's the best mountain runner we've ever had in this country, in my opinion. Male. Yeah. So, you know. But yeah, that it does put it in perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did.
There's
put it in
really,
perspective.
Really great video on YouTube of Colin Donnelly running the original record. Have you seen it?
No, but I'll watch it tonight. Yeah.
He just jogs off Crib Goc like he's just trotting down a nice grassy path. It's just incredible.
But even the navigation on the gliders and
but if you can see, you can see.
You can.
You know what I mean?
Even when you can see on the gliders, it's still like being in an episode of Game of Thrones. So you're like, there's just like spiky chairs everywhere and you're like, where am I going? So
yeah,
even at that level, you have recce'd and recce'd and you know exactly what you're doing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
puts it into perspective. It really does. Like, you know, I was like, oh my God, I'm so bad at this. But then I was like, hang on a minute, love. For most people, going up Snowdon in those conditions is bad, and you've done a lot of them. So that's what it was about. And it was an incredible day out. Would recommend.
It's a very special place, actually. I still think it's as good as it gets, really. Right, yeah. So, I mean, the purpose of this podcast was really to talk about the Thames Path 100.
Yeah, that was the other race that was going on. And you had some Welsh weather as well, I hear.
We had some weather. Old King Chaz had some too, didn't he, for his special day? That he pounced on us after we'd already released the event.
He did that to me too, because I was like, oh, we'll do it on a Monday because there'll be nobody up there because it's a Monday. Oh, now it's a bank holiday. So,
right.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
At least the weather, and much like you probably, the weather kept more than counteracted King Charles's celebrations, and the path and the car parks were emptier than they ever have been, despite it being a massive...
Was it not party time and down in Henley on those boats where you get all of those amazing drunk people?
He was empty. Wow. And you can never park there when the race is on because Mill Meadows is busy anyway. And this time there was just space the whole time. So yeah, it was weird. Anyway, yeah, it bucketed it down for really from about an hour after the start. I mean, it was drizzling at the start, then it started coming down a bit heavier.
Oh man.
Until about I couldn't say actually 4, 5, 6 o'clock. I don't know. It depends where you were on the trail at that point. But and then overnight, the path became a quagmire. I mean, I know people will say it was brutal, which is not a word that I would use for a muddy Thames path, but certainly very slow going in places. But then Sunday, bright sunshine. You know,
of course it was.
Yeah.
Of course it was. But those paths don't. I mean, I've done the Thames path, and it is if it's dark and you get to the bits where it's muddy and they're really slidey, you just start to lose your shit, don't you? Because you're just flying all over the place.
And that is exactly what seemed to happen. So, so for those that don't know, it starts in Richmond on the water there, and we run to Oxford, Queen's College Sports Ground, which is the grounds of Oxford University. And what the general state of the course is, pavement and pretty decent hard-packed trail, certainly for the first, 7 to 10 miles, and then still quite a lot of pavement and hard-packed trail to kind of 20 miles, and then you get a little bit more trail thrown in. But in the second half, it changes quite rapidly, doesn't it, to more fields, more single track, more what I would call floodplain or water meadow, which, you know, when it's raining as hard as this, they're just sodden.
Yeah,
and in places underwater.
It had been raining for a while, hadn't it? Like, it'd been raining the weeks before.
It was just groundwater was so high, wasn't it? And so nobody dropped at checkpoint one or two. A few dropped at three. But by the time we made Henley, only 15 people had dropped out of the race. Right?
Whoa!
But between Henley and Culham or Abingdon, which is, that's 40 miles from our 51 to 91, 117 more people dropped out of the race.
What? How many people started?
339, which is our biggest field here, but I couldn't believe it. I mean, the race HQ phone with people dropping out, and then, you know, the numbers that went at Reading, Pangbourne, Goring, Wallingford, even Clifton Hampden, 15 miles from the end. We had to do 3 full minibus runs during the night of people just rescuing the fallen from those checkpoints and getting them to the finish.
So what happened? Like, what was it, the weather, or were people like injuring themselves, like falling over and stuff?
So it was the state of the path, and but this race, this is my perception really anyway. I do a show of hands at the start, your hands up if it's your first 100, and I do that so that people don't feel like they're a fish out of water, that they realize that they're not the only person doing their first 100, that there's lots of other people around them who are also stepping into the unknown, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the number of hands that went up, were this race always attracts more first timers, maybe because it's flat, it's seen as an easy option, which we both know is not necessarily the case.
It's literally the opposite of the case, but
and a lot of hands went up, and I think it just got beyond people, and you know, it probably wasn't that much fun anymore. Foot issues particularly kept getting quoted back to me. Blisters, you know, feet that have been wet and muddy for 20 plus hours, you know, it is uncomfortable. And, you know, people have just had enough. We did have a few people, and this perhaps needs a further discussion, who literally just stopped on the path and sat down or just wouldn't move and required physically, you know, helping from the trail. In one case, carrying off of the trail, which I can't say we've ever had before. Yeah, I mean, the lack of sort of self-sufficiency there was a concern to me. You know,
What do you mean, like, lack of self-sufficiency? Like, why were they just stopping on the path?
Well,
exhausted.
Exhaustion / injury, a combination of those things. But I just, you know, the Thames Path is never very far from a road. And their lack of ability to get somewhere where they could actually be helped was a great concern to me, because actually this was in the dry overnight, and if it had been truly truly bad weather, very cold, wet, windy, or you were up a mountain, you're potentially putting your own life in danger, aren't you? So
you are, yeah.
I was quite alarmed by that, and I don't quite know what caused those situations in every case. Often the medics obviously deal with them first, and there's several things tend to be going on at the same time. But
it's like a horror film. It's like something really infected people and they just stopped on the trail and they couldn't move from the trail.
I would get a call saying, I'm not going to give any names here. I'm not going to embarrass anybody here. So, you know, there's 117 other people this could be. But, you know, I can't go any further. No problem. Whereabouts are you? Well, I'm on the trail between X and Y. Yep. Okay. Well, can you get to this road? If you go back this way, no, I can't move. Right. And that's a hard one to know what to deal with, because without actually someone then attending in person, I mean, what do you do?
I don't know. And it's kind of puts the frighteners up you as well when you hear, I can't move.
Oh, it does, for sure.
With mandatory kit on this one, is there like a bivy bag and all that sort of stuff in the kit?
Yeah, survival blanket, but spare emergency base layer in dry bag. Bear in mind, it wasn't raining at this point. Once the rain stopped, it stopped. It really, that was it. The weather changed, and it was obviously quite humid because there was so much water just coming off the bath. But yeah, anyway, focusing on the negative maybe there a little bit.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's actually quite important, because with Thames Path, a lot of people ask me about doing their first 100 miler, and I'm like, I wouldn't recommend Thames Path because there's so many easy errors to make on it. And the main one is you go out too quick and you feel amazing.
Yeah.
And you even feel amazing until you get to the halfway point. And then between miles 50 and 60, suddenly things start to go quite badly wrong. Like you start feeling like you throw up, or you start throwing up, and then you realize you've completely spaffed all your energy. And if you're not... Well, if you haven't got experience of that, like mental battle as well as physical battle, and going, it's not over until I've, you know, really tried to eat something, had a salt tab, had a sit down and a bit of a think, called someone and said, you know, I feel like this, what should I do? Then if you don't know to do those things because you've not got that experience, it can feel like the end of the world if it's your first go. And I think that people sometimes assume the flatness is a plus, whereas actually the flatness only serves you as a plus if you have experience of having paced yourself on that distance before.
Because you need to manage yourself in a different way here, don't you? And you hit the nail on the head just a minute ago. It is a bit of a race of two halves in terms of how it is underfoot. And the thing is that, you know, when you look at the winning times, it is on paper a very fast race. Yeah. You know, we've had... you know, two sub 14 hour winning men's times, and then a 14:18 this year. So there's only so much you can say the course is in a horrific, brutal condition, and the winning male time is 14:18. And I know the path would have got worse as more people churned it up, but we're only talking about 200 sets of feet, not 2,000. There's only so much worse it's going to be. And it just, the management, I think people lean very heavily on getting to halfway quite quickly, having managed their pacing and their nutrition quite poorly, and are then faced with this death march. And as the ground deteriorates, it gets cold and it gets dark and sleep deprivation, the obstacles just become insurmountable for some. This was, we normally get about 68 to 70% of the people home. So as hard as it is, it's still a very good finish rate in 100.
Yeah.
It's not our highest finish rate. The South Downs Way 100 has a higher finishing percentage. And I think we're both on the same page here. It's actually easier to break down because of the undulating terrain, the South Downs Way.
Yeah, because it the terrain on the South Downs Way more or less will dictate your pace to you. And I'm talking as someone that is mid to back of pack, not an elite, you know, relatively normal person. That's dictated to you. You're like, oh, good, a hill, I'll walk and eat on this hill. And oh, good, a bit of flat, I'll make a bit of hay where the sun shines. But you don't get that with the Thames Path. And the other thing is, because it's so close to London, I wonder if it's people who, you know, have done a marathon or a 50K and are just like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to see how far I can go and don't.
Well, they have to have run a 50 miler to qualify. Yeah. When we go through the qualifiers pre-race, it's very apparent that the experience level is less here. It is. And you're right. It's just that the step up is from 50, but it's the old adage, cliche. 100 is like 350s. It really is, because that second half often takes people nearly twice what it took them in the first half.
Yeah. It's just been surprising that people assume that the Thames path is paved because they assume it's like how it is out of like Richmond.
London.
And the Thames is like hard packed. It's a road, isn't it? It's a road race. That's kind of how you see it. Because you don't understand that actually a majority of it, if you look at all 180 odd miles of it, runs through muddy fields and very waterlogged areas and bits of farmer track and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's just about doing a little bit more research. But I don't doubt that if you've not run in those conditions overnight or in the day for a long period of time, that it can come as a bit of a shocker and it just drains you of energy, doesn't it? And I guess there's a fear as well. What if it comes back? But I'm with you on this. Why do people just stop in the middle of the path? And it's not like one person did. It's like a few did, which is just a bizarre thing because you can always make it to the next aid station, can't you?
Well, or the nearest road or just having the wherewithal to think, you know what, I am getting myself in deep trouble here. I really don't feel like I can continue. Because these people weren't collapsed. They weren't, you know, they just had sort of, refuse to continue to use Laz's term, which is kind of bizarre. But around them, you know, 60% of people did go on to make it, which was over 200 people finished.
Yeah.
And it's worth recognising that, you know, a couple of years ago, we had 28, 29 degrees at this race. And it was the opposite. It was so hot that people struggled because of the heat. So
yeah, didn't that become known as Vomit Fest 2020 or whenever it was?
Was it 2020? Yeah, the COVID year.
Yeah, it was a year before I did it, so I think it must have been 2020 or 2019. But it was it was the reports coming back from it in my world were just like, don't go on the Thames Path; it's covered in sick. People were just dying out there.
But again, it's a management thing. Like the South Downs Way is so exposed, but we don't have anywhere near the sort of range of stomach issues that we tend to get at this one. I don't think we're doing a very good job of selling the race here. It is very pretty, and some of the sections are, you know, best of the best, but it is relentlessly flat, and I do think that catches people out.
For me, my thought. Everybody in the world knows my thoughts on the Thames Path. I'm just not a fan of it, mainly because I lived in London for so long. I spent so long running up and down it, but there are parts of it that are really beautiful, and. I just think it's very much, it's like this, with 100 milers, I think sometimes people are like, I'm going to do a 100 miler because I've seen it on the internet and this one looks easy because it's flat. And it's like, you just need to show respect for the distance regardless of what you think it's going to be and do your research and maybe talk to some people that have done it because I have so many clients who want to do it as their first one. And I'm just like, it's a great race, but to get the most out of it and to have the best time you can, I would advise doing something a bit more hilly. I always say go for Autumn 100 the first one because it's so well supported and you've got that gravitational pull of Goring Village Hall, which is like, everything's going to be okay because I'm only ever 12 miles from the hall.
It's funny, is it some people can't cope with that. They're like, oh my God, I'm back where I started and my car's just out there. And do really well at the point to point where it's the journey. And some people just think, no, this journey's just too far beyond me. Like this is just, whereas the autumn breaks down easier mentally. So again, it's just preparedness and the approach, isn't it?
It is a great race though. And it's one that I one day will revisit the Thames Path because.
How many times have you run it? Once?
With you once, but it's my fastest 100 miler by quite some way. It was probably one of it's the hardest one of yours I've done. I mean, I've done all of them, but I think hardest for mentally for me was North Downs Way because it just bloody Detling steps. Mm-hmm. But hardest for me, as in I ran hard and I messed it up and I started to throw up at 60 miles, but then I had Lorna pacing me. So I was like bang on it for the rest of it. It was painful because I was just going really quick. I'd gone too quick. It was mentally really difficult, but it was the fastest. And I think, you know, to be able to go back and go, look, I'm just focused. If I was focused on time and going sub 20 on 100, that would be the one that I'd be like, this is the one I can probably do it on because you can take out the hills. That's not a thing that's going to affect you, but it's the body management and it's the eating and it's the not pissing about smashing out like 7 minute miles in the first 30 miles because for me. Well, that's just not going to happen.
Well, I for various reasons, I ended up spending quite a bit of time at checkpoint 1, 2, and 4. So I got to see almost the whole field through. I did see the whole field through the first checkpoint and then most of the second. The pace at the front, it never ceases to amaze me. You know, there were 15 or 20 people running sub 12 and a half hour 100 mile pace at the start, you know, low 7 minute miling, 720s, 730s, including both the athletes who went on to win the race. So Lina Kaliskana came over from Norway, and Norway has an incredible pedigree here because Therese Falk won the race. Ingrid Lid's been second here, and now Lina came over, and Lina actually, she ran off the front and led the whole way in a very, very impressively kind of stoic performance. Nothing seemed to faze her. She finished looking absolutely untroubled by anything that had sort of happened. She went through 22 miles in 2:48. I mean, yeah. And then she basically ran away from everybody gradually, but that sort of transpired because Sharon Walker, who'd been pushing her in sort of gradually dropping back, but close enough that if Lina had a really crap last 10 miles, she might get caught. Ended up having some trouble after Goring, and then Becky Atkinson came past her and ran into second place. Lina won in 17:02. Becky was exactly an hour behind that, and then Sharon was an hour further back of that 19:11. So 17:02, yeah, it's an hour off the course record, but, you know, that's Sam Amend. We know her class. Mm-hmm. And considering she had no idea of the route or the terrain and that it was harder going, a seriously impressive run. And she recently ran over 240k for 24 hours and is on the Norwegian national team now. Bearing in mind, Lina's just crept into her 50s.
Whoa!
Yeah, how good is that?
I know, I saw photos of her as well. She looks amazing.
She really does. Yeah. You see Vet 50, and in the preview, we're sort of thinking, you know, it's that at that point that the career of an athlete in this sport tends to just be on the edge, like the performances can just start to drop off. But she just continues to get faster. And again, it's that inspiration for all of us that, you know, age is just a number, right?
Yeah, it absolutely, it totally is. And I actually sort of kind of almost disagree with you a little bit there. I'm 42 now, and I still think my best days are in front of me because of the fact I look to women like that and think, well, you know, this is incredible. And that time on that terrain, man, when it's that wet, it's just, if you look year to year on winning times for the Thames Path, they fluctuate so wildly. They really do. Whereas I think the other ones tend to stick kind of quite close together. But that's amazing. But did you feel like too many people were going too fast at that?
Oh yeah, and I used to comment. I used to, especially with people I knew, just point out the obvious. You know, you're running 13-hour pace. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But I upset a few people over the years. What I don't want to do is knock anybody psychologically because, you don't want to put any doubt in their head. They're just running on feel and they're getting it wrong, but who am I to sort of judge that, really? I can only go off what I see every time. The reality is that it's mostly the blokes. Lina was equally guilty of going off far too fast, and she's averaging sub 8 minute miles for the first quarter of the race and finishing in a time that averages over 10 minute miles. But it's relative. That's a relevant tactic for a lot of runners. And if you run off the front and gap everybody else and can sort of hold that gap, that's a legit racing tactic.
Yeah. Another thing is when you're working on those aid stations, you see them come through, those speed goats come through, and then you wait for an hour or two. Then people start to come through. If they're all coming through at the same time, then I feel like you should start a new, there should be the volunteers, right? The Centurion Army, brilliant. But then you should also have the reality check police who walk around with a little notebook saying, hi, yeah, I've looked at your Run Britain rankings. This is a reality check for you. I think I should do it and be like, I'm just telling you that you are going too fast, and just walk away.
There'd be a lot of issuing of that kind of detail on this event.
Yeah.
Men's race, totally different story, really competitive, lead changed hands. Matt Field, let me just double check his name. Matt Field, he won one of the GB Ultras events earlier this year. He broke 6 hours for 50 miles on the trail, which just, you know, okay, he's not going to win Western States, but certainly solid. But this was his first 100, and he, as I tend to find at this one, someone in his position, they ask questions. You know, I'm doing this, is that all right? You know, he's definitely sort of feeling his way along the trail. And he led through Henley. And then some course markings took several of them, including Lena and Matt, off the route. They took them on a slightly longer Thames Path route, the classic Thames Path.
What do you mean?
The diversion was added a few years ago. And they just basically followed markings down and around a water meadow instead of cutting down the road, which adds just about a mile to their distance. Before we got to it and corrected it, the first six had been through, but some of them knew that that was wrong, the wrong way, and had cracked on. So Jeff was in second, Jeff Cheshire. He actually overtook Matt when Matt took the longer way round. So I then had to intercept Jeff, Matt, and then Paul Maskell in third and say, look, Matt's going to get a 15-minute time credit for that because it wasn't his fault and he did follow the marked trail. You guys followed the correct route, which wasn't marked, so you didn't do anything wrong either, but you're not going to get a time credit, obviously. Yes. So actually on the ground, Matt was still competitive with Jeff, in fact, just in front of him as they made Pambourne. But then Jeff just put on the afterburners. It's the best I've seen him run. He's a superb runner. 14:34 at the Autumn 100 in the past. He's won Chiltern Wonderland. Jeff won't mind me saying this. Jeff marks all of our races for us that he doesn't run. So he's a extremely valuable member of the community just from a volunteer point of view. And he's so important to us. So, yeah, we really follow his progress. And Jeff can fluctuate massively, both in terms of his performances, but also his weight. Yeah. He's somebody who's always struggled with that. And when he's not in shape, he is not in shape. But he came into this one in incredible shape. He'd obviously got training right. And 14:18 in those conditions on a course which is longer than the Autumn 100, not just a PB, I would say the strongest run he's ever put in. And totally deserving of the win. Matt was second, 14:52. And then he actually finished with Paul, but they both were aware of Matt's time credit. So they finished together, but Paul was obviously third, 15 minutes behind, and Matt in 15:07. So fast in the front of the men's race for sure.
I like an exciting men's race, I have to say. Sometimes I'm a bit sad I never get to sit at the sharp end of races and just watch it happen.
Mm.
I do like that. Any other fun time Thames Path stories?
I mean, so many.
My favourite one is Dan the Bucket Hat Man.
What? You're going to have to explain that one.
Apparently, and I've gleaned this from social media, Gary Barlow's son was running.
Oh, yeah, that's correct.
And I
found out after, yeah.
What the actual heck? I can see my in now into Gary Barlow's world. Like, I'll just offer to coach.
So you would take that Gary Barlow fan?
I'm a massive Take That fan. Like, I've seen them 22 times. Like, I know that everyone.
Oh, my God.
Cool.
You know the number. Yeah. Right, yeah, no. This young lad finished. Don't get it wrong, but I think he's 21. And so he'd have been the youngest person out there, probably. And he finished.
Back for his dad's concert on Sunday. That's what
he had some really adoring fans and, you know, great support and everything. And Drew and I were watching, sort of thinking, wow, this guy's loving it. And turns out later we found out, yeah, it's Gary Barlow's son. Now, I'm not really one to be dazzled by the lights of celebrity. I wouldn't class that as much, but the number of people who definitely think it was quite special, including you by all accounts, is great. How has he found the sport? That's what I want to know.
I'm more interested in the fact he's 21. Like, I just find that people that are doing this stuff at that age, I just think it's incredible, because I certainly wasn't doing that at 21. I was doing other things that were not that at 21. The fact he's Gary Barlow's son is one thing, but the fact that he finished and he's 21 is also another. And he had apparently was dazzling people at aid stations with his witty repartee. So yeah. I'm all for that. But what are these other fun stories that I've missed?
Well, they're not fun. They're just the absolute nightmares of of organising the Thames Path. What happened at this event, apart from the obviously having to deal with some of the leaders going off course and then trying to judge who we told and who we didn't so that it didn't affect the race more than it had to. The people giving up and stopping on the path, the naughty crews continuing to hang out in Streatley and try and support their runners all the way through the night.
Don't do that. Please, people, stop.
Especially not in Streatley.
No.
That wasn't particularly entertaining.
No.
The Thames Path, as an organiser, what happens is it really is the most difficult race we organise. The North Downs Way pushes it close, but it is incredibly stressful. It's fast. The checkpoints are in quite busy areas. They're hard to get in and out of. And there's just a lot of stress with residents and landowners because there's a lot of, you know, quite wealthy people in the area. And we deal with a lot of hassle. But this shout out to this one lady who owns some of the Thames Path of Streatley. Locals to Goring and Streatley will know exactly who I'm talking about. This lady owns a property which backs on to the Thames Path. And I guess technically the Thames Path runs through the bottom of her garden. But it's not a garden. It's an entire field. And every single time we have a race, she comes to Goring Village Hall and has a conversation with the volunteers. Her opening gambit is, I own the Thames Path, which is quite a loose statement because it's 184 miles. So the likelihood of someone owning the whole thing is slim. But the volunteers always call me in a panic. This lady's come in, she says she owns Thames Path. Are we making a donation? How long's the race going on for? And I'm like, look, I know exactly who that is. I'll come down. And her response this time was, don't tell him I'm here or he'll come down immediately. And then she left. I was like, finally, I think we've got through on this one.
So hang on a minute. She went down to complain and then said, don't tell him I'm here or come down. And then she left.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I missed her anyway. It was such a shame that I missed her. But we end up on it's like some sort of tunnel of the universe, driving down through Benson over and over again, back up and down the course between Goring and the finish all night. Feels like you're in some sort of time warp. All the roads feel the same. They look the same. You get so disillusioned about, which part of the course you're on. And there in the middle of that stretch of road is a 24-hour McDonald's. And the number of times you end up visiting that McDonald's through the night, every time we organise this race, just to sort of eat and drink something to keep you going. The runners, I think the ones that made it will mean something extra special, perhaps, because it was so hard in terms of conditions. So I hope
I do like war stories. But you weren't there in 2023 in those conditions. And all 100s are special. Everyone that finishes 100 is special. But props to people who completed it, because I was out in the rain all day and it just isn't fun. But what you can take from it is, like I said before, you cannot pay for that training. So even when you go on to do other things and you're like, do you know what? It's all right, because I've run for 10 hours in the rain before, so I can definitely do it again. It gives you a new perspective. But absolutely congratulations to everyone that finished it, because it's not an easy race. And I just hope that if anyone's thinking of doing it, they do a bit of research. Talk to people that have done it before, because even the Richard McDowells of this world made big mistakes on that race.
Oh, my God. He had a horrendous second half.
Even the elites make mistakes on it. Because it's just so easy to make bloody mistakes on. I remember me and Julius running into Henley, looking at our watches, and literally we said this, oh, look, we're on for a 16-hour finish. I feel so good. Do you feel good? Yeah, I feel great. I feel so good. And then at 60 miles, he's throwing up. I'm throwing up and doing other things that people have to do. He ended up waiting at one of the checkpoints for an hour and a half and drinking 4 cups of tea before he could move again. Because
that happens a lot here. The checkpoint dwell time at this race is extortionately high. I'm coming in I'm going to have four cups of tea. My shoes are coming off. My bag's going on the floor, and I'm going to hug this radiator. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot. Just so you know, Ken made it 100 mile finish number 96.
Didn't he
finished in 25.08 and was absolutely disgusted at his performance. A personal worst, doubting he should be doing it anymore. But with now four hundreds to go to his 100th, you know, I think I about talked him round, but he was not a happy bunny at the finish.
Oh, Ken.
Nobody is harder on
themselves. Ken should have been marched in down to Buckingham Palace and crowned as the true king, because he is the true king.
He sent me an email about his greatest moments in our events. I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but
no, you didn't.
I'm going to have to save this for another time, because the anecdotes deserves its own episode. But the greatest moment he's ever had in one of our events was in the original Winter 100, when this certain class of steam train went over the bridge that he was running underneath, and he had to stop himself. He thought it was hallucinating, a train that is apparently so rare and something that he's always wanted to see. That's the highlight of running 9,600 milers, was seeing that train in one of the events. So
I love that. I love it. I love that.
He's just cut from a different cloth. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
His approach to it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so that's the Thames Path. Massive congrats to everyone. Huge thanks. 100 volunteers and about 12, 15 course markers on top of that. Actually, I think it was 88 volunteers. But anyway, a massive army of people who made it possible. And some of them, like Lower Radley, for example, they're getting there 11 hours into the race and they're there until 27 hours into the race, more. Mm-hmm. Outside, in a rowing club, you know, helping people with 4.5 miles to go. I mean, that is some dedication.
It is. And I also noticed that there were a few people that were ill and couldn't make it last minute. And I noticed those spots filled up pretty quickly. So I think that just is absolutely, like, admirable.
You're absolutely right. We were about five or six people short coming into the race. And they're not, we can't be five or six short. There are certain places where you just cannot afford to have four people instead of five. You know, it's just too much of a burden. And without exception, every gap got filled at the last minute. And thanks to Bad Boy Running Crew for stepping up and filling a few of those, for sure.
I sort of noticed some good vomits from our BBRC crew, and the only thing I was upset about with Bad Boy Running, there was like eight or nine of them, was there were no women. There's just blokes. Just the blokes representing. I think the women said they're all volunteering, but
okay.
Yeah, one of them, Ross, he had a really awful experience, and something I think your listeners will definitely be able to identify with. He sent me a message that almost reduced me to tears, because he's never vomited on a race before, but he did on Thames Path. And while he was sick after putting a Tunnocks caramel in his mouth,
no,
he threw up. He can no longer touch the Tunnocks.
No.
Yes.
That's an abomination. I mean, I did that with pesto and gin, and I can't eat pesto anymore. But
Tunnocks, on a race?
No.
Pesto and gin gels. No.
Right, just quickly, while we were talking about that, for posterity, female starters 60.
Yep.
Female finishers 39, 65%.
Yeah.
Male starters 279.
Yep.
And then 169 finished 61%. So the women outshone the men in terms of the finish.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Did any of the women sit down on the path and refuse to move?
One.
Okay, then. On to the next topic.
Yes. One versus two. There were three specifically, I'm not going a step further, and one of them was a lady.
Let's call that toddler behaviour, because that's what it is.
Look, we're just mentioning it so that please don't do this to me again, guys. I just can't handle it.
Yeah. Saying I'm by a bin near a tree on the Thames Path isn't helpful.
That's a classic, that one. Yeah. So we've now got 10 days to the North Downs Way 50.
You like to back them up, don't you? Back them up, back them in.
Yeah, this is mental. This 2 week period is mental. But we've got everything dried and cleaned and put away. Black Trail Runners are actually using most of our kit this weekend at their event up on Dunstable Down. So I'm hoping it's dry so we don't have to dry it all out again. But big shout out to them. They've got a full event up there. And Sunny, who worked the finish with me, was saying they got 80% of the entrants to their 5 and 10K are people of colour. So they are. It has been a massive success in what they're putting on there.
Cool.
And hopefully it's a good weekend for them. Hopefully they get the weather up there. So
yeah, it is going to be a cracking weekend this weekend. It's going to be, I'm going doing the lap and it's going to be 18 degrees. That's basically boiling, isn't it? I think we're all going to have a nice weekend. Did you not want to talk about the UK's greatest trail running festival?
Tell me more. I'm listening.
Picture this. Imagine a world where the Centurion community and people that were, I would say, ultra curious come together for a weekend of outrageous running, fun, incredible feats of endurance, plus the opportunity to maybe shop or eat or hang out with people, and free workshops, a going down sauna, and a number of different race distances to choose from, all with added camping and banter. Tell me you're not interested in that.
I mean, you have literally knocked it out of the park.
That's what's happening in July.
What an intro. That's right, everybody. Wendover Woods Weekender.
It's going to be epic. I'm really excited.
9th of July, come down. You can see us talking to each other in person. I mean, could it get any better?
I don't know if that's going to happen because you are RDing 100. So I might be shouting at you from a long way away. You might be doing stuff.
But listen, there's so few people doing it. I'm just going to just wander around lost, you know, all over the campsite, wondering what the point is.
You can wear a bucket hat and pretend you're at Glastonbury.
One with the cans and the straws coming out the side. There's 33 people entered in Wendover Woods 100. Epic. So we're kicking off Friday, 7th of July, with the 100 miler starting in the morning, and then the gates open on Friday afternoon for camping, hanging, as Ali has already said.
Is one of the things that, like, I've got really on board with this Wendover Woods thing, and not just because I like you, because do you remember back in COVID times when all the One Community stuff happened and everyone rallied together to make people feel better, and people started running who hadn't run before and people did bigger distances? This is now the opportunity for that to become real, like real life, where we actually get to like give each other a high five and meet each other and see each other. And I just think it's such an incredible opportunity because it's such a central place in the UK for people to come for a day or for a whole weekend and camp with their kids and their dog, that I think it's really, people should really consider looking at that weekend even if they're not running, and coming down and just soaking up the atmosphere and maybe just saying thank you to each other for like the support that they gave each other in that time, because I think it's just an incredible opportunity to see that love that the community has for each other. Do you know what I mean? I think it's going to be a really, really brilliant weekend of just support and love and running and just kindness. And that's why I'm like, I want everybody that I know to come because it will be great.
Well, I hadn't really thought of it as the sort of evolution of that One Community thing in May 2020, but you're absolutely right. It is that. And there are races for everybody. You know, it's the first time we've done anything as short as 10 miles. And the lap isn't easy, but with a 4-hour cutoff, we tried to put something there that if you do want to race with us and have never even got close to thinking that anything we do is accessible, this really is. You can walk that and have a great time doing it. But as Ali says, you don't have to run. You can just come and experience it. I think when you go to a checkpoint, when I go to a checkpoint at a race, the volunteers there, they form this like bond because they're going through this quite intense experience together, and there's so much goodwill, and it's like this little bubble that exists for the weekend. But then it's a tiny bubble because there's 5 or 6 or 7 of them. And then, you know, they go away and maybe they see each other at a race in the future. But this is the time to come down and hang out and meet those people that you've seen at our events over the years, you know, in one place, and actually chat properly without the intensity of the whole race environment going on around you at the same time.
And one of the things that I'm really keen on doing, so me and James and Dan are going to try and co-present across the weekend with some speakers and some workshops and some other bits and bobs that we're going to do. But what I'd really like to do is get people there who aren't necessarily runners, but who are your crew, your pacers, people that want a crew, people that want to pace, people that are kind of ultra curious, maybe haven't like actually entered their first ultra event or even maybe their first trail running event and just want to come down and have a forum that's non-judgmental, not snooty or cliquey, to ask any question they want, because the wealth of experience that we've got in that field is world class. It really is world class. You've got all people from all walks of life, from like Dan Lawson to me to Anna Harding to like whoever else decides to pop up, Kat Simpson, Eddie Sutton, and we are there to answer your questions, whatever they may be, and give you, you know, advice and all the stuff that we've learned for free. And we want to do that because we want to grow this community and this sport. And this is a really, really brilliant opportunity to be able to do that. So it's not like people, you're just going to come down and watch loads of people miserably running around a forest. You're going to come down and have a really, really great experience and watch loads of people miserably running around a farm.
Yeah, and we've got food and drink on site. We've got XL Coffee. We've got a creperie. We've got a subs type place. We're going to be doing some other cooking as well on site. And
you can always
wander into the woods as well. The woods, they've got the cafe. There's part run on Saturday morning. There's the Gruffalo Trail. There's orienteering. There's Go Ape. The woods are great by themselves, and it's less than a mile from Race HQ and the field up to the cafe in the woods. You can walk the lap. We're going to be chucking on some more fun stuff in the woods as well. There's a kids race on Sunday morning, and there's loads of stuff to try there. There'll be brands with demo shoes and demo headlamps and all sorts. It really should be a great weekend. And as Ali says, like, it's for everybody, really. You know, we're coming down, whole family. Obviously, I'll be wiped out from staying up for several days nonstop, but in a fun way. And really, Dan's got his sauna. If for nothing else, you've got to come down and have a sauna with Dan.
And
no money sauna. Yeah.
You're going to be able to have a massage, not from Dan and not in his sauna. It's not that sort of sauna. Massages, sauna. And runners are going to be there and pair ups are going to be there. So you can bring your shoes and learn how to fix them, which is a really, really great thing to be able to do. And I'm going to run a couple of workshops. One of the workshops is going to be crewing and pacing. So if you are a crew person or a pacey person or a support person, it would be amazing to see you there just for the hour and a half, whatever it is that we decide to do it, to talk to you about the pitfalls of being a crew and being a pacer. Because I did the other week with a bunch of people and it went down really well because there's so many things people don't think about. And
it's a great idea. And it takes the load off the runner. If you've got a crew and a pacer who know what they're doing and know the tips and tricks, then it makes life so much easier for you. And I think, you know, if you're crewing somebody, you care about that person and you really want to do a good job, but they don't always have the answers. So, it's a good angle. I like that one.
Yeah, but we're gonna, you know, we'll put out when we know what's going on. But I think the thing is, mark it in your diary, come down. I mean, how much is camping? Like 25 quid for the weekend?
Maybe even less. And that's for everybody. That's for the tent. I can't remember, but yeah, it's no more than that anyway.
Yeah.
And all of the stuff on site is free then. You know, the demo gear, the chats, the talks, the workshops, that's all included. So it's beyond a bargain. And I'm excited that the runners who are doing the 100 mile, 50K, 50 mile are actually going to have some support from people rather than...
They're going to have an audience.
Yeah. And I think we'll get much higher finish rates, particularly in 100, from the group, because they'll have some inspiration. It won't just be them trawling around by themselves, coming back to a lonely tent with a few people in it.
They'll be coming back to a disco
All night rave.
I'm thinking of getting my 90s disco decks out and be like, right, I'm going to do a DJ set. That'll spur them through.
A massive laser, like at Glasgow, like a laser that goes about 7 miles into the sky, so that
I actually know the guy that owns the Great Big Spider from that field at Glastonbury, so I could get that, put it in the woods if you wanted, just as a little extra nighttime thing.
Move Las Vegas, the old Las Vegas, into this field for the weekend. Great shout.
It would be amazing. Can you imagine? People will be like, am I hallucinating? No, you're not.
You've made a lovely poster as well, which I was pretty blown away by, I have to say. Your artistic skills are are deep. They run deep.
They are. I'm a creative. What can I say? I know how to use Canva. That's what I've done there. But I have made a little poster, and we'll get that out and about. And if people can share that poster amongst their running clubs and groups, especially if you're the only ultra runner in your running club and people think you're mental, bring some of your crew along. Like, say to them, look, come and meet these relatively normal, sometimes nice people, and get them involved. Because, you know, the more people that take part in this epic stuff, the better, as far as I'm concerned, because it's for everybody and everyone can have a go.
Yeah, and we did want this. We did actually plan to have this in 2020, and it was ripped from us by the pandemic. So it feels really great to actually finally be doing it, something we've talked about for literally 5 years. We're excited, and we can't promise, but we're very hopeful that everyone's going to have a brilliant time. So yeah, and thanks to you, Ali, for doing so much to help get it off the ground. You've been the creative inspiration behind it. We started looking at very large outdoor games for children, massive Jengas and that sort of shit. So we're coming.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. I am absolutely sweating my off under this.
Can I just ask a quick question before we go? You know the kids' race? What's the age limit on that? Because technically we're all children.
There's under 12s and then there's 13 to 18.
Right.
Two different races. Yeah.
I'm just wondering. I was just asking for a friend because I really want to win one of those trophies, the big ones with the sword, and I was hoping that would be the one I want.
I'm not sure they're going to be giving them away. There will be trophies. Pickle could probably run, though. How old's Pickle?
Pickle's 5. She's also not coming because she doesn't like people. She's a little bit like me, but I can put a face on and she can't.
great. Right. Okay. What else have we got? So you're off to the lap this weekend. That's exciting.
I'm going to do the lap. And everyone keeps saying, oh, the lap's the greatest ultra in the UK. And I'm like, why? I just can't understand why. I know the Lake District is beautiful. I go there all the time. I know that.
I haven't heard that and I'm disgusted to hear it.
I'm going in as a mole. Well, I'm not that much of a mole. Literally, I'll be wearing my Centurion Ultra Team t-shirt. Yeah, mole to go and see what they're doing.
That'd be good. I think the weather's supposed to be all right this weekend as well, so it could be an absolute barnstormer.
It's going to be a delight, an absolute delight. And then my next Centurion race is your South Downs Way 100.
Oh, that's close now. Speaking to some of the landlords down there today, it's happening. Oh yeah, and we better just say after our Winter Downs 200 chat.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
We opened, and we've had 110 applications. We want 100 starters, so we're sort of saying, right, okay, we've probably got space for another 20, maximum 30 people. So if you think you might want to run that race, you really need to get your application in now, because the website is only showing, 35 or something actually in the event, because we're only moving people to the confirm list once they've paid the entry fee and there's installment options, and it could be months before the final entry list is on there. We have only got probably 25 places left in that race. Massive.
That's unbelievable.
I couldn't believe it. You know, we were sort of thinking maybe we get 15 or 20, and I think we sold 75 on the first day. And I was absolutely blown away. And I've had several people say to me that they heard our conversation about it and it planted the seed and they just couldn't let it go. It's you know, it sort of captivated them. So,
and I would like to publicly apologize for that to those people.
For causing them literal harm. Yeah.
Yes.
But thanks, everyone, for your support and the interest. It's blown us away and we're absolutely delighted we've put something on that we thought would be interesting and capture imaginations, but you never quite know, and it has proved to be the case, so obviously over the moon.
I want to know who's doing it. I want to see the full list. Are the people that are doing it on the website?
Yes, the ones that just paid in full at the start are on the website. But obviously we're not going to publish the full entry list until because otherwise we're just giving people ticking a box and the name pops up, whereas We'll get it launched properly, I would say, end of July. I think the final installment's due from people. So at that point, there'll be kind of a final list. But it's what I kind of expected. It's a lot of Centurion runners who've done 100 milers with us who think that this is right, that's the next step. But then some awesome spine arc, dragon's back type runners who want to do this type of event, more like a runnable 200 with a winter twist, you know?
Yeah.
So I was absolutely delighted to see some really strong names coming in from other areas that just haven't done our events before.
It's so exciting, man. Like, I really wish I wasn't going on holiday, like, because I just want to come and watch this epic rollout. Like, I'm so
really excited about it. I'm just, it's so different for us, and it's really something to look forward to at the end of the year.
It's those stories about why people have entered and what they're, you know, like where they've come from and like what they hope to achieve. That's all so inspiring. This kind of goes back to Wendover. Like, the people that I want to talk to the most at Wendover are not necessarily the people that are the most famous or the bestest or the biggest in the room, but it's just hearing normal people's stories is so inspiring. And I think that having people, you know, just going, do you know what, fuck it, I'm going to do it. I'm signing up. I'm going to do the work and I'm going to do it. It's just... Oh, it makes me go tingly. It's brilliant.
And hopefully Mr. Ashworth, with his magical media skills, will be able to tell that story, you know,
with
the
magic
power
box
of video.
Yeah.
Just two more things. So we launched something this week called the Lunar Round in conjunction with Petzl. Myself, Kim and Debbie, Martin Consani created this round out of Ambleside that you've got to complete around the Lakeland Tops, in the local area, Fairfield Horseshoe and Langdale Horseshoe, what have you. And you've got to do it between sunset and sunrise. So the twist is, you could do it in midsummer, conditions are probably good, don't get much time. Could do it midwinter, conditions probably horrendous, you'll get 16 or 17 hours to complete it. So it was great to see some people jumping on that straight away and giving it a go.
I would
say it's like... a mini Bob Graham. It's like if the T round is like a just under half a Bob Graham, like a 40%, this is more like a 30% or 25%. So
I might just go and do it for the lap. Might just nip out Friday night to do it.
Easily. You could easily. I'm planning on meeting you up there on Monday. I was going to say we should go for a run, but it's just crossed my mind that you've got a 50 miler on Saturday. So
we can go for a run, but it won't be very far and it won't be very fast.
We'll just bag one away, know that you're missing.
We're going to the Lunar Round. Why not?
Yeah. Double it. Reverse. Anti. So there's that. And then, South Downs Way 50 for next year opens on Saturday morning. So we're recording this. It's Wednesday night. It will go out tomorrow, Thursday the 11th. So that'll be Saturday the 13th of May, South Downs Way 50, 2024.
I cannot endorse that race enough. It is my favorite.
It sells out. It's always sold out, and it does sell out quite quickly. You've probably got, based on past experience, between 3 to 4 months to enter, but we have had it go in 2 weeks before. So again, you shouldn't have to stick your name on the line straight away, but if you do want to run it, don't hang around, just in case.
That's
all our news. Yeah, thanks for joining me.
We've stuck
brilliantly to our weekly schedule, haven't we, so far?
It doesn't need to be weekly. It just needs to be surprise and delight, shock and awe. That's what people like.
It's so nice for me not droning into the mic about what happened at the Thames Path 100. A lot of people said to me, "Oh, you seem to laugh a lot more when you're chatting with Ali." I'm like, what, than talking to myself? That would be quite worrying if I was laughing whilst talking to myself.
I was thinking about our podcast relationship, and I was thinking of it a bit like the mullet hairstyle, right? Like the front says business, the back says let's party. And I feel like you're the front of the mullet and I'm the back of the mullet.
I feel like that with the British Ultra Running podcast as well, but
I
think you need the chalk and cheese.
You need the balance.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, especially with Dan. Whereas I think you could quite easily do this by yourself, but I'm going to keep bothering you anyway.
I don't know what part of the mullet Dan is. I just don't know. It must be the whole thing. He must be the shaved bit at the side.
He's the undercut.
Yeah, he's the undercut.
Have you ever had a mullet?
Yeah. I got married by accident when I was 21 and I had a mullet then.
What?
Mate, I married an Australian, mate, by an accident.
Right. I cannot wait to hear more about this story. It's probably not one for right now.
My book is coming out in March 2023, everybody. An uplifting story of addiction and ultra running and getting
married
by accident.
March 2024?
24, yeah.
Oh, right, you said 23. I was like, what is 2 months overdue? Right, okay, wow. Yeah, and you had a mullet at the time. Please send pictures.
Oh my God, I had a mullet and my dress cost £2.80 from Oxfam and wow. And my shoes were 50p.
Oh, Dan would have been proud of that. He made me a pair of rubbish shoes, by the way, sewn together bits of other trainers. They are absolutely brilliant.
So I've asked him to give me a pair of them and I want to give away half a day's workshop with somebody, but then he stopped messaging me. So I'm going to have to grab hold of him because I want to wear them at Wendover because they're so banging.
They are seriously I think he spends a serious amount of time making them. They're not easy to sew together.
But they look amazing. They look like the sort of thing that you see Ed Sheeran wearing at Madison Square Gardens. That's a good thing. Or like Pharrell Williams.
So I've never had a mullet, but I have had a mohawk. So perhaps we should, you know, change the profile picture of the Centurion Running Podcast to a joint together picture of us with our classic headies. My Duracell mohawk, orange mohawk, and you with your mullet quality.
Just go onto an AI maker and put in Pat Sharp, Funhouse, James Elson, Ali Bailey and see what comes out.
Sharp, that's actually not a bad shout. I hadn't even thought of that.
I think it'll be fun. Okay, right. I'm going to go now and finish watching my Netflix show, which I'm currently enjoying, and I will speak to you later.
Big love. Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.